Hey kids, on this fifth anniversary of 9/11, okay, I mean no disrespect to all the friends and families of all the victims who live with the pain and loss every single day of their lives, and all the current victims of Ground Zero and the Pentagon who are living with health problems as a result every single day of their lives. But I find all this media 9/11 circus anniversary bullshit offensive and obscene when they're still finding bodies in New Orleans 1 year later. And most of the population of that great city are not even still allowed back to rebuild and have yet to find permanent housing. Now, I am not belittling 9/11 or the 3,000 world citizens killed that day. But we lost not only one of the greatest cities on the planet, New Orleans herself, but an entire region of the country, and little is being said or done to rebuild it and help those millions of displaced people from the Gulf Coast. That's all for this week. I'm Tally, and this has been La Perspective Femme.
Okay, not sure how this next bit is going to go. It's another odd email I got. And sometimes when it's long, I either create a second page for it, but I thought I might try to do it on the radio, see what happens. This has something to do with Senator John Glenn. The subject was what Senator John Glenn said. Now, this didn't come with a link, so you should always be suspicious. A lot of these crazy emails I get, you know, remind me of these Gold Star Mother stories that never happened. And anytime you get an email that says, please keep this circulating, you think, well, why? You know, if it's the truth, tell us the facts, show us where to get the verification, and then let it stand on its own. The idea that you need to keep resending this bad, unsubstantiated story around again and again like the Gold Star Mothers, that's just crazy. But let's take a look at it. What Senator John Glenn said. Oh, this is justification for the idiot's quagmire in Iraq is what the purpose of this. Somehow they're dragging John Glenn into this. And I don't think John Glenn was a senator when we went to Iraq, so we'll just have to see where this went. There were 39 combat-related killings in Iraq in January. So apparently it was written around this time. I don't think that's true. In the fair city of Detroit, there were 35 murders in the month of January. That may or may not be true. It says that's just one American city about as deadly as the entire war-torn country of Iraq. Well, no. Iraq's averaging 100 dead Iraqis a day. There was like 3,800 dead Iraqis in the month of July. That was the last month they had the statistics for as of this writing. So over 100 a day. So if there was 35 in Detroit for the month of January, I kind of think 3,800 is bigger than 35. I'm pretty sure. When some claim that Bush shouldn't have started the war, state the following. In other words, when someone says 2,700 soldiers dead in Iraq, here's what you reply with. A, oh, I love it when they number or letter the questions. A, FDR led us into World War II. That's true. What an odd way to start a defense of why Dermonkey killed 2,700 soldiers for no reason. Germany never attacked us. Japan did. Well, that technically might be true, but the idea, Germany and Iraq aren't the same. Iraq wasn't kicking in the borders of one nation after another, and then George Bush finally stepped in. Yeah, in the 1990s, after George Bush Sr. gave Saddam permission to take Kuwait, then they went and got him out. But Saddam was smart enough, for some reason, he was smart enough to send a telex, this is before we had email, he sent a telex to the White House saying, I want my, the part of Kuwait that I claim, I'm thinking about taking it. What would you have to say about that, Mr. President? And Bush replied, Middle Eastern affairs are your concern, not ours. And we're pretty sure that's true because Saddam held up a telex. He said, here's the telex I sent to the White House, and here's the reply. And they went to Poppy Bush and said, is this true? And he said, classified, can't say. Oh, it'd be all wrong if I gave you the facts. So I'm kind of thinking that's true. So if you take into context that he asked permission, Iraq hadn't invaded anybody since they had this war with Iran. So, yeah, it's a little different from Hitler invading Poland, invading Czechoslovakia, invading, you know, everybody. Russia, Hitler was taking over the world. I don't think that is an exaggeration. We really didn't want him to hit the United States after taking everybody, you know, I'm sorry, once he had all of Europe and all of Africa, yeah, that's a whole lot of raw materials to put into his war machine to come after the United States. So, but it's just crazy to think that because the word war is in both senses, the Iraq War and World War II, that they're not the same. Okay, from 1941 to 1945, 500,000 lives were lost, an average of 112,000 per year. Didn't they say Stalin killed 20 million Russians? Isn't that right? Because it's 6 million Jews. I think Stalin killed more than Hitler. And so I don't know where this guy's getting 450,000 lives were lost. C, Truman finished that war and started one in Korea. North Korea never attacked us. Well, now wait. The Democrats aren't the people that wanted to stop communism. Well, we did, but the Republicans, that was their big cause. They need a boogeyman, and the communists used to be it. Now it's Al-Qaeda. You always have to have a boogeyman or you can't build up the biggest, you know, we spend, what, 40 times what anybody else spends on defense, and we call it defense. It's a war machine. Our war machine is 40 times bigger than anybody else's war machine, but somehow we're still losing in Iraq. Way to go, George. North Korea never attacked us. Well, communism was spreading, and I wasn't around a whole lot in the 50s. You know what I think? Why do you have to go back 50 or 60 years to get a parallel? There's nothing any closer than 50 or 60 years. From 1950 to 1953, 55,000 lives were lost, an average of 18,000 a year. Is he talking about the Korean War? I guess he is. Okay. And I don't know much about that. D, John Kennedy started the Vietnam conflict in 62. No, I think Eisenhower started in the late 50s. Vietnam never attacked us. Well, geez, I don't know. Now we're fighting Vietnam. Johnson turned Vietnam into a quagmire. I think you might be right on that one. From 1965 to 75, 58,000 lives were lost, average of 5,800 per year. Well, yeah, but Johnson left office in 68. In 68, he said, I'm not running again. So Nixon had more Vietnam than Johnson did. If this is Democrats versus Republicans, Nixon ran in 1968 with the slogan or whatever his platform said, I'll get us out of the war. And he ran on that same platform in 72. Amazing. F. Clinton went to war in Bosnia without UN or French consent. Clinton didn't wait for the French. You'd think that'd be a positive. Bosnia never attacked us. Well, no, it's called genocide, please. He was offered Osama's head on a platter three times by Sudan. Oh, well, the other guy said Somalia. Interesting. Everybody had Osama they were going to offer us. Osama has attacked us on multiple occasions. Yeah, one big one on George Bush's watch. Gee, in the years since terrorists attacked us, Bush has liberated two countries. He has? What would those two countries be? I guarantee right now, if you held an election or if you took a poll in Iraq and said, do you love what your country's become or would you rather have Saddam back and all his troubles? I think they would say, give us Saddam back. When Saddam was president, they weren't murdering over 100 civilians a day. I think I can guarantee that. Crush the Taliban, objection, the Taliban is not crushed. Crippled Al-Qaeda, objection, Al-Qaeda is not crippled. They're 10 or 20 or 50 times bigger than they ever were. put nuclear inspectors in Libya. A, I think he did that. B, I think a lot of that credit goes to Clinton. Nuclear inspectors in Iran, I disagree. They are not in Iran. In North Korea, they are not in North Korea without firing a shot. Well, he didn't do any of those things. Well, yeah, he did the Libya thing, but Libya was tired of being an outlaw nation anyway. And besides, Libya's got oil. No telling what deal Bush made him. And captured a terrorist who slaughtered 300,000 of his own people. I assume they mean Saddam. And how long before Bush has killed more Iraqis than Saddam? How long? The Democrats are complaining about how long the war is taking, but it took less time to take Iraq than it took Janet Reeder to take the Branch Davidian compound. What a stupid handjob cheap shot is that? The truth is, Iraq is taking longer than World War II. Now, whatever crack you want to make about Janet Reno, we've got 2,700 dead soldiers and no end in sight. So I don't know what a crack about Janet Reno, how is that seen as big points for your side? We've been looking for evidence for chemical weapons in Iraq for less time than it took Hillary Clinton to find the Rose Law Firm billing records. Objection. Assumes facts not in evidence. There's no reason to suggest that Hillary lost or found those Rose Law Firm billing records. When they finally did show up, they looked at them and they were, oh my God, Hillary's fingerprints were on her papers. Can you believe that? That's proof of her guilt. When they did find the billing records, they verified that those were the original unaltered billing records and everything was like it was supposed to be. So again, what an idiotic hand job, cheap shot. It's just stupid. It's like your mother wears combat boots. It's like, what kind of argument is that? It took less time for the 3rd Infantry Division in the Marines to destroy the Medina Republican Guard than it took Ted Kennedy to call the office after his Oldsmobile sank in Chappaquiddick. You see where we're going here? This is their idea of an attack. This is their idea of our side's better than your side, because how long did it take Ted Kennedy to call the police at Chappaquiddick? Well, yeah, in the 60s. Isn't it strange that they got to go back 40 years to grab some kind of parallel? Why don't you go back a year? Why don't you go back 2 years, 3 years? Go back a president. But no, they want to go back into the 60s. And there's nobody alive on the planet that knows what happened that night. You know, you can yell Chappaquiddick until you're blue in the face, till the end of time, but nobody knows what happened. You can say, oh, he did this and he did that. But it's a wild guess, because nobody knows except Ted and the dead girl what happened. It very easily could have happened the way he said. So, you know, it's kind of a non-thing. It took less time to take Iraq than it took to count the votes in Florida. Objection, those Florida votes were not counted. The Supreme Court said counting the votes would cause permanent harm to petitioner Bush. So they weren't counted. Okay, our commander-in-chief is doing a great job. Now you can tell because it's in capital letters with an exclamation point after it. The military morale is high. Oh, that's almost a mistake. The biased media hopes we are too ignorant to realize the facts. Oh, you mean the biased media that said, yay, we're going to war, yay, here comes the war, yay, George Bush said he had to go because WMDs, and everybody admits it's all the truth, so here we go, WMDs, yay. The biased media. Yes, the media is very biased. Name somebody who said, maybe we should think about this before we go to war. Name a member of the media that said that. But wait, there's more. John Glenn on the Senate floor. Oh, I don't know if we can get into this. Some people don't understand why military personnel do what they do for a living. Oh, okay, this is a bunch of, we need the military. The military is a good thing, which I am so much less a military man than I was a couple of years ago. The idea that these yahoos, they stand and cheer when Bush says we're going to stay in Iraq no matter how long it takes, because to stop pushing men into the meat grinder would be dishonoring the men we've previously pushed into the meat grinder. Oh, somewhere there's some Bush monkey logic there, but I don't know about it. And yeah, like I said, there's a whole bunch more why we need the military. And fine, on the whole, yes, we do need the military, but the military is only a good institution when they have a sane, decent man commanding them. When you have an idiot, bloodthirsty oil monkey in charge of them, the military is a very bad thing.
Gentlemen, we have called you together to inform you that we are going to overthrow the United States government.
You still think that jet fuel brought down the World Trade Center? Does anybody else see a problem here? If the government has nothing to hide, Why are they so afraid to answer a few questions? This story does not add up.
Please, you'll wake baby Surrey. Well, get it out now. Enjoy yourselves. Laugh. Enjoy some real comedy, because I'm telling you, this weekend it's going to start. It's going to be all programming to commemorate the fifth anniversary of 9/11. All the networks are getting into it. CBS is showing their 9/11 documentary, and ABC's got their Path to 9/11 docudrama. And, of course, Fox is going with Ryan Seacrest's Rockin' 9/11 Countdown. Yeah, now the controversial one is this ABC one, The Path to 9/11, which the original title was Sheiks on a Plane. But this is controversial because apparently it's very heavily slanted, and it blames 9/11 on Bill Clinton and makes Bush out to be a saint, which is kind of ridiculous, because if Bush is going to be on any ABC program, it should be Lost. I got jokes. Yeah, and the Senate Democratic leader, Harry Reid, he said, ABC must cancel this deeply misguided programming. And I thought, gee, ABC canceling a show because of 9/11? That could never happen. That... No, I kid. Please. People think they fired me because of that, but it was because I wouldn't wear a hairnet. That's the real reason. Yeah, now President Bush has been flying all around the country this week trying to convince Americans that they are safer than they were before 9/11. Today, he said because of the wiretapping and the secret prisons, not one American has been attacked by a stingray since Sunday. Oh, people are fucked up, aren't they? That's the thing that got you. But this is a tough sell for the president, because 39% of Americans in the latest poll say they feel less safe than they did 5 years ago, and particularly women, who cited not just terrorism, but those 36-hour erections. That... Now, the new Senate report that came out today said that there is no evidence, this is nothing we didn't know, but nice to see it in the report, no evidence that Saddam Hussein had ties to al-Qaeda before we invaded Iraq. And Tony Snow, the White House press spokesman, said this is just another partisan attempt to denigrate what administration officials work so hard to pull out of their ass. Speaking of pulling stuff out of your ass, Governor Schwarzenegger got into... And I like him. You know, he's doing some good things. But he got into some trouble, and he had to apologize because he said Puerto Ricans are naturally feisty because they're a mix of black and Latino blood. Whereas guys like him are naturally feisty because they're a mix of white blood and steroids. Now, what he meant to say is that girly men are fags. That's what he meant to say. But I thought it was nice. The Latino group here in L.A. fired back. They said, please refrain from calling us hotheads or you're a fucking dead man. And look, I read in the news, I have to report it, Paris Hilton, and I like Paris Hilton, but... Apparently, she got a DUI on Hollywood Boulevard, and she said the entire incident was blown out of proportion, not unlike the guy she was sitting next to. But I kid, Paris. I like Paris. No. Star Magazine says we're having a feud. That's impossible. I've never spoken to her. But it just, it seems like everything happened to her. It's embarrassing. I mean, this thing was embarrassing. To get her to stop blowing into the breathalyzer, they had to tap on her head. That's embarrassing.
And good to know that the festering wound in my soul is just below the surface. No doubt about it. 5 years is a long time. So much so that as the president spent the past week giving various speeches on our nation's security, he felt compelled to remind us how this whole damn thing started.
Hear the words of Osama bin Laden earlier this year. Death is better than living on this earth with the unbelievers among us.
Osama. That name's one for the old Where Are They Now file. Oh, no, seriously. Where is he? Now! Perhaps the rekindling of Bush's interest in Osama bin Laden is a sign of how far we've come in the last 5 years. We've progressed through all five stages of grief. First, there was denial.
He's the ultimate parasite who found weakness, exploited it, and, met his match.
And then, anger.
I don't care, dead or alive, either way. I mean, it doesn't matter to me.
And then, anger again.
This man wants to destroy any semblance of civilization for his own power and his own good.
And the next stage, well, anger.
This man is so devious and so cold-hearted that he laughs about the suicide, so-called suicide bombers that lost their lives.
And of course...
I couldn't imagine somebody like Osama bin Laden understanding the joy of Hanukkah.
Not sure what that stage was. Not sure where to put that one. Other than on our show, as often as possible. And finally, as with everything tragic, acceptance.
Fella came the other day to the office and said, "Well, are you worried about Mr. bin Laden?" I said, "No, I'm not too worried about him."
And then for some reason, back to denial.
Gosh, I don't think I ever said I'm not worried about Osama bin Laden. It's kind of one of those exaggerations.
All right. So apparently the president has his own stages of grief. There is denial, anger, Hanukkah, and of course acceptance. And then I believe denial.
shall we use to fill the empty spaces where waves of hunger roar? Shall we set out across this sea of faces in search of more and more applause?
The IRS raised eyebrows this week by announcing it's turning over some of its back tax collection duties to private debt collection agencies. This move has consumer advocates worried for several reasons, one of which the heavy-handed tactics of some of those debt collection people. And they're not always going after the right people. Our story from NBC's Kerry Sanders.
Felipe Reyna says all he did was answer the phone. After that, he was bombarded with calls demanding he pay a $1,300 debt. The only problem?
I did not owe the money.
Despite the collector's mistake, the calls became more aggressive and threatening, like these recordings with other victims.
You don't want to pay your bill, boss? I need to pay your bill. My company will get their money one way or another.
The FTC reports almost 20% of its consumer complaints are about aggressive, obnoxious third-party debt collectors.
What are you? Are you
I am the guy who's going to end your life. That's who I am.
End my life? What, are you going to kill me?
I recently recovered $275,000 for a client
on an abusive collection call case, and I'm not sure that it had any effect on the conduct of the industry.
Federal law prohibits abusive calls like that, but consumer rights advocates say those heavy-handed tactics remain in part because they work. The third-party debt collectors trade association says the problems are small for an industry that collected $39 billion last year.
Well, of course, the problem is not small, and it's not going to go away because the collectors are paid by the percentage of money they get. If they bully 10 people into paying, they get, say, $100. If they can bully 20 people into paying, then they get double that. And young testosterone men, they want to win. They want more money. The law gets in the way. You break it. I was in collections for a long time. I joined my first finance company in 78 and was there, well, until I left the car lot. It was kind of all the same business. But I learned the loan business back at, it was a rival of Beneficial Finance. And I did that for, oh, I don't know, a bunch of years. Became manager and never really made any good money, but sure learned a whole lot about how to collect from poor people. But anyway, that got to be a drag, so we moved on to other careers. But these bastards, they're going to abuse the law. It's their job. Hell, I've told a couple of these stories before, but when I was in, it was sometime around 78, 79, somewhere in there, the district manager came by and said, hey, he picks up a card for a customer. You know, he says, show me all the late people, and I show him, and he said, hey, what's with this guy? He hadn't returned your calls. And I said, well, there's no way to reach him. He doesn't answer the phone at the house, and we call work. They say it has to be an emergency, and he says, give it a damn phone. So he calls the place, and he says, this is Mr. Williams with the Red Cross. Mr. whatever the customer's name is, family has been found dead in Guyana. Some relatives are here. We need to notify the relatives. And it's like, dude, you can't do that. His name was Don London. Lived in Oklahoma City, and I'm watching him do this. Like, dude, you better hope he don't come to the phone. He comes to the phone and tells someone what you said, and God forbid there's a recording of it. You could lose your job just to show me that it was good to be aggressive. Jesus. But anyway, and I got a funny story for you here in a minute.
Debt collectors receive thank you notes every single day. And the reason they do is because the consumer is so appreciative of the fact that the debt collector assisted them with their payment problems.
Felipe Reyna says the debt collector threatened to call his neighbors and tell them he was a deadbeat, but he was never called by his title. Your Honor, you see, Reyna's a judge on the Texas Court of Appeals.
If this folks can do it to an appellate court judge, what do they do to the plain old blue-collar worker out there that perhaps only has a high school diploma?
The answer is on hours of recorded calls, now being investigated by federal authorities.
They're nothing but a financial terrorist.
Kerry Sanders, NBC News, Miami.
Don't know if I told the story before, but it's one of my favorites, so maybe you can indulge me. I opened the Hard Rock Island in 1985 and borrowed money on my Visa MasterCard. Always hit it perfect credit. You can guess where this story's going, but every time we needed another $1,000 to open another week, I just went and got me a cash advance. And pretty soon that caught up with me, and by 2 years later, in the summer of 87, we closed the doors. And I was $40,000 in debt, and I didn't have a job. I didn't have any money. Tried to file bankruptcy, and the attorney said, sure, bring me $200 or whatever. And I said, I don't have that much money. What are you, nuts? I'm so broke. He said, well, I can't help you. So I owe all this money to these banks, like six or eight banks. Bank of Chicago, Chase Manhattan, I mean, the regular suspects. And they wanted their money. And I called them. If you owe some money, it's always a good idea to call. If you call them and say, hey, checking in with you, here's what I can do, they'll be a lot nicer to you. They'll be a lot less likely to take you to court and all that stuff. So I called them and said, hey, I can give you $100 a month. That's all I can do. I was doing little odd jobs, little temp jobs and stuff, trying to find real work. Mrs. Bard had a tiny paycheck coming in. And so the banks were pretty much willing to take that. But then one day, remember now, I was a bill collector for, I don't know, a decade, a two, I forget, it's just a damn long time, and it's going to be a depressing job. However, you get a little bit good. One little sidebar to that is you get pretty good at a debate. So anyway, I collected money for a lot of years, and I'm in the middle of this hell. We don't have any money. We're just so broke, and $40,000 in debt. And so this guy calls me one day, and he's got the whole attitude, the whole hard-ass collector attitude, and he didn't know who he had on the other end of the phone, swear to God. I can be a smart ass. And if I have a little notice, it can be a bad day for you. So this guy calls and says, all right, buddy, here's what you're going to do. You're going to get in your car and you're going to drive to the post office today and overnight me a check for whatever, $1,000 or something. And I just started laughing. He said, you better watch what you're doing, boy. I'm the big tough bank collector. And I just laughed at him and said, hey, dude, guess what? Now, this is all a lie, but, you know, if you've got nothing, there's very little they can take away from you. And back then, the bankruptcy laws were such that if the collateral basically was unsecured, you know, like a Visa card. Now, if you go buy a boat and you file bankruptcy, you got to give the boat back. If you go buy a new Cadillac, file bankruptcy, you had to either pay for it or give the car back. But credit cards, goodbye, debt. So this guy, he's all Mr. Testosterone with me. You know, he was over the phone. He's poking me in the chest. Here's what you're going to do, boy. You're going to get in your car and you're going to drive to the post office and overnight me a check for $1,000. I said, dude, suck it. I said, I got $2,500 in my name. Right now, everybody's getting $100 a month. You can be satisfied with that. I'll tell you, you guys all get together because the first one that hands me a summons, fuck it. I'm going down and going to file for bankruptcy and you don't get a nickel. Right now, you're getting $100 a month. You either be happy with that, go ahead and serve me. Call my bluff, serve me. I'll go down, file bankruptcy. You don't get a dime. And that $2,500 I got, I'm going to take a little woman to Hawaii, and I'm going to send your ass a postcard from Maui, smartass. I got your address right here on this little payment book. I'm going to send you a postcard from Maui, you piece of shit. Don't you try to get tough with me. And he had nowhere to go. He could say, I sure am sorry. Yeah, if you'd send that $100, then I'd appreciate it. So if you owe the money, you know, you talk to them first. I don't know what the new bankruptcy laws are, so don't do this. Don't piss your banker off. But back when you could do it, and we never thought we'd ever see Hawaii if it wasn't for the generosity of Don Ho, had too many frequent flyer miles because he flies around the world all the time. He just, out of the blue, sent me an email, said, would you like to go to Paris or Maui? And Mrs. Bart's going, Maui. We didn't think we'd ever get there, so thanks to Don Ho. Anyway, it sounded real good. As a kid who was that broke, the idea of spending $2,500, I don't even know what a trip to this day, I don't know what a trip to Hawaii costs. But I assume you could get to Hawaii and back for $2,500 in whatever, 1987. But that was a whole lot of fun. Not too many times you get to tell the man, hey, suck it, man. You don't like it, you can just bite me. I'll send you a postcard.
Please welcome the very talented Alonzo Boat.
All right. How you guys doing? I am the unknown winner of Last Comic Standing. And I'm glad they had season 3 because I came in second on season 2. And there's nothing worse than coming in second on a reality show. Because see, if you come in fourth, then they applaud and you walk off. And you come in third and they all applaud and you walk off. And when you come in second, you got to stand over here and act like you're happy that he won. Speaking of second, where is Dick Cheney? Have you seen? Because I get nervous. Whenever Cheney disappears, I think something evil is going to happen, you know. Because Cheney has gone straight gangster. That's right. Dick Cheney's a gangster now. And it's not that he shot his friend in the face, you know. Because that could happen to anybody. He shot his friend in the face and then just went back to work. Now, that's cold right there. Not even a Crip would do that. You know what I'm saying? Right? Even a Crip would stop by the hospital and be like, yo, dog, you all right? You know. Cheney's like, man, I got evil to do. Thank you. He shot an old man in the face. And I know he was old because he had a heart attack 3 days later. How old do you have to be that it takes 3 days for your heart to realize you've been shot in the face? I've never been shot, but I imagine my entire body would know at the same time. It's weird, man. Bad things happen in the world. Good things with me. I've been happy. Things have been good. You know, I won the show. I bought a house. That was my big thing. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. I live in the suburbs now, and I'm like deep in the suburbs, really. I'm the only brother on the cul-de-sac, you know, which is cool. I mean, my neighbors aren't racist or anything. I'm just nervous because there's a lot of kids around, And I know if something happens to one of these kids, yeah, that suspect list is going to be really short.
This is the CBS Evening News with Katie Couric.
Hi, everyone. I'm very happy to be with you tonight. It was the first front in the war on terror, and in Afghanistan now, the Taliban are back with a vengeance.
Wow, that actually sounds like news. Were they wrong about Katie Couric?
Free speech. Everyone is entitled to his or her opinion, and we're giving folks a chance to express them right here.
There's the Katie Couric bullshit we've been expecting. Katie, why in the hell would you want to turn over your news division to some idiot to talk? Even if I agree with them, why the hell would you do that? It's a 30-minute show. You bastards hack out 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 minutes of commercials out of that. A little sidebar. You know what else those sons of bitches do? And don't you, anyone that says that's an accident is going to get slapped. You're watching CBS, and they say, we're going to go to some long-ass commercial. So you switch over to ABC, and you hear them say, we'll be going to commercial. And then you go over to NBC. We're going to commercial. Why do they all go to commercial at the same time? It's like, you know, sure, you can spend the time and the money and the hassle and get your VCRs quacking and get them all and then compare, but they don't want you to see their news upside the other guy's news. I think that's a little conspiracy. But out of the 30 minutes, they hack 9 or 10 off for commercials, at least 21. And now Goofy Butt here is going to turn it over to some monkey to talk about whatever he wants. What the hell good is it on Monday to have a NASA scientist come out and say, we got to do something about global warming now because the Earth's burning up and the grizzlies are coming down into town because there's no food up north? And then the next night, have the vulgar pig boy on and say, it's all a plot the liberals made up to sell whatever. Who has learned anything? What the hell good is it to anybody to get those two sides of that story? You know, it's too bad they can't take the news and make it about news. You know, matter of fact, if I was king, if I ran Congress, I'd make it a law that the networks, as you know, you guys want to use airwaves, all right, here's what you do. We want an hour of news every night. We want no commercials on the news, and we want to make it illegal for you to trace the ratings of the news. In other words, if you see that pictures of Tom Cruise's baby is the biggest story you can think of in the whole world right now, we don't want you to be rewarded for that bullshit with higher ratings. So next week, we get two of those stories a show, and then three, and then five, and then pretty soon your Entertainment Tonight. That's what we've got. They also couldn't give these anchors $5 or $10 million a year to sit there if it wasn't personality driven. How about the facts? How about you get some old white guy out there and not Bob Schieffer, but just get somebody there who's not there for their looks, that has a brain, and let them deliver the news. If they can speak and think and they know something about the news, they're qualified to tell us about it. You know, another thing, this might piss off some of my brothers. Why is she showing a bunch of leg? You know, I've never understood that. And I'm sure it's because men wrote the workplace rules because there were no women there to write them. So the men wrote them, and they decided that proper business attire is a woman showing her legs. Now, that seems to me to be a little crazy. I mean, don't get me wrong, if it's a pretty girl, I like seeing the legs. But what's it got to do with business? Got an example for you. When Tony Soprano goes to see Dr. Melfi, she's an attractive kind of older woman. But when she's sitting across from him in this situation, as he's looking at her, she's about half nude. You know, he sees her legs, and then there's her from her waist up. That's all he sees, his leg and from the waist up. So he's trying to talk to this woman, but she's half nude standing there in front of him. And it just seems bizarre that American business attire is with the woman not quite half nude. But why wouldn't a woman wear pants to work? To me, that makes all the sense in the world. Why should a woman have to show her legs? And to make it worse, well, it is different for entertainment, but, you know, you get these shows on TV where they actually put a light on the woman's legs while she's sitting there talking to you. You know, if it's a man, he has a, like, Leno and Letterman, they got a front on their desk. If it's a woman, you take away the front so you can look at her legs. Well, maybe that's okay for Entertainment Tonight, but not for a newsreader or a psychiatrist or a board member. Why do women put up with that? It doesn't seem to make sense. Now, I'll go back into being my sexist pig self here in a minute, but it just seems unusual. Why do women take that? Why do they you know, and a little cleavage never hurt, and oh, the new hairdo. I mean, it just seems men all dress the same because men don't see themselves as sex objects, but they demand that the women have, you know, a different dress for every day of the week, and oh, her hair's different. Oh, now she's got this kind of earrings on. That's got nothing to do with business. And it doesn't help to get your news from some pretty airhead that can't find out what the hell she's doing. I'm not sure Katie is the stupidest person in the world, but she's so bubbly and giggly that you really can't take her seriously. First time she covers a major story, I think it's going to look kind of dumb. She's sitting there all somber, you know, with her perky busting out all over. Oh, and one other thing. I want you women to know that I'm being sensitive to you, which is why I'm saying this. Why? I don't even know if they are supposed to anymore, but the idea of high heels, and now this is the part you're not going to like, but it seems like the whole point of high heels is to jack a woman's butt up. It reminds me of an animal in the woods. You know, you got a couple of elk or a couple of deer or something, and, you know, I don't know if it's the man or the woman. Someone's got the big bright tail. It's like, here it is kind of thing. Well, to me, that's what I can think of. No reason. There's no logical reason for high heels that I can think of. But I'm not much of a thinker. But it just seems to me that to get a woman standing on those little stilts, it just makes her ass look different. If a woman works in your office, why does she have to make her ass to the man's liking in order to come to work and do her job, put some food on her family? It doesn't make any sense. It seems to me, if I was the boss, if I ran a company, I would let women, well, first rule would be within bounds, dress like you wanted to. I mean, you know, you can't come to work with your Smoke Colombian shirt on if there's an important client coming in, or if you're a doctor, you know, this and that. But if you're just at an office where you, a UPS office or something, seems like dressing casually, or if you got a, you know, UPS, they all wear brown, fine. But the idea that you have to wear makeup and jewelry and stockings and skirts and high heels, I mean, that makes no sense from a business point of view. If you girls want to dress like that, but who in this world, I've never been in high heels, but it's my guess they're not very damn comfortable, and to work in them all day, that just doesn't seem like a very good idea. You're on heels, your butt's jacked up. I don't know what all problems women have, but it just seems like adding to them with the sexual stress and the high heels, et cetera, doesn't seem like a very good business policy to old Bart.
And in something we're calling snapshots, Vanity Fair has the baby picture everyone has been waiting for.
I can't confirm or deny it. We will neither confirm or deny. I can neither confirm nor deny. We will neither confirm nor deny.
Now, before we go tonight, all summer long, people have been asking me, how will you sign off at the end of your broadcast? I've racked my brain, and so far, nothing has felt right. But here's a look at how some well-known anchors have signed off through the years.
Good night, and good luck.
Good night, Chet.
Good night, David.
And that's the way it is, Thursday, August 30th, 1962. This is Walter Cronkite. Good night.
Thank you for joining us. Courage.
Saying good night, and good news.
I'm Ron Burgundy. You stay classy, San Diego.
I'm not sure any of those will work for me, but if you have a bright idea for a great sign-off, log on to our website at cbsnews.com and tell me.
Katie, I don't think you'd want to hear my suggestion for your sign-off, because it would probably begin, thanks for watching, I'm a highly paid whore. Jesus Christ, it's just getting worse. What a dumb idea it was to hire Katie Couric to be the face of CBS News. They just lost Dan Rather. Their last anchorman gave the idiot monster monkey a pass on going AWOL during wartime. Sealed forever in history now. The subject won't ever even come up again. Next time it comes up, it's going to be, oh, he's one of them Dan Rather nuts. Ah, ha, ha, ha. And that's what we're going to get from now on because of Dan Rather. So they go from Dan Rather to, gee, I can't believe the grass Bush has on foreign policy, Bob Schieffer. And now they're going with a lady with the legs. Ratings are down. Turn the spotlight on Katie's legs up. Oh, we got another picture of Tom Cruise's kid. Whoop-de-doo. Let's call it news. Just shoot me. Thank God we got sites like Smirking Chimp and BuzzFlash and some of the English sites, you know, some actual news sites that bring you actual news instead of this crap about Tom Cruise, Tiger Woods, and the rest of them. Give me a break.
I know we'll have a lot of fun reading them, and who knows, maybe one will actually stick.
How about, I'm so stupid, I can't think of a way to say goodbye. Do you know of any ways I can say goodbye? I've only been in the business 40 years, and I can't think of a way to say goodbye. Can you help me? Jesus, Katie. You might want to have some kids with me just to raise the IQ level in your family.
But for now, all I have to say is, I'm Katie Couric. Thank you so much for watching, and I hope to see you tomorrow night.
Well, it didn't work. She started out, I think they said $13 million her first night, the Curiosity Factor. I set a TiVo for it in case she blew up. I wanted to have a copy. Well, that's what you're listening to. So she started with $13 million. Now she's at $7 million. She's in the bottom three. If Fox had a nightly news show on a real network, she'd be fourth. America's spoken, Katie. It didn't work. I hope you got a lot of money. CBS, way to go. Katie's checks are going to cash either way. She signed a contract to be available to CBS for the next 5 or 10 years, whatever the term was. But she's cashing the check, come what may.
What is wrong with these people? Jimmy Swaggart was busted with an ugly prostitute in the back of his car. I have sinned against you. Pat Robertson does business with some of the most brutal dictators in Africa that you could possibly imagine. So he could run his gold mine, his USA Gold. These are some sick people. They fundraise for Operation Rescue, and then they take a nice picture of the airplane full of foodstuffs and humanitarian stuff, and then as soon as the cameras are out of range, they take all the humanitarian stuff off the Operation Rescue plane from the 700 Club, and he packs on mining equipment. I mean, these are just the phoniest, baloniest people in the world. They just need to control you. And so they sell you this unbelievable, they sell you the Taliban. They sell you the Ministry of Vice and Virtues. That's what they sell you. Which, by the way, has been opened for business again in Afghanistan. Yep. Remember that Ministry of Vice and Virtues that would go around and beat women because they weren't wearing the right color socks, because their shoes clicked too loudly on the sidewalk, because their burkas were not rubbing the ground if they left the house without a close male relative? Remember that? They're back in business in Afghanistan. Oh, yes, they are. And the only place I could find it was in the Arizona Daily Star. But I'll bet you Dobson's cheering for it. Dobson, whose mother beat him with a girdle, of course he hates women. Now when he dresses up in women's clothing, he feels both excited and humiliated. You know, it's like a dichotomy for him. He can't reconcile which one he likes best. So, I mean, what is wrong with these people? I mean, you know, John Bolton, the UN ambassador, who's not really been confirmed, he's just there on a recess appointment, he actually had to admit that his first wife, Christina, was forced by him to engage in group sex. Hot tub Tom. Group sex in the hot tub. Pull up a bubble. Ask me a question. Any question. I'm Hot Tub Tom. Why are they all so weird? I don't understand it. And now today, Bush is, he's going to veto the stem cell bill that passed the House and the Senate as an election year issue. This man is going to tell me what's ethical. This man's going to talk to me about a culture of life. He's going to talk to me about the sanctity of life. What, the sanctity of life? When does that run out? Ah, recruitment age. That's when all bets are off. Right at recruitment age. Yes, after that, you're cannon fodder, baby. No more sanctity of life BS. No more of that. I mean, he's going to veto the bill because he said it's a choice between science and ethics. And, of course, no one's more ethical than George W. Bush. Why? Let's have a look at some of the moral and ethical decisions he's already made, like outing a CIA operative who worked on nuclear nonproliferation issues in Iran, starting an illegal war in Iraq, giving the Israelis one more week to blow stuff up. Civilians. Setting up an Islamic Republic in secular Iraq. And disengaging from the hunt for Osama bin Laden, the man that killed 3,000 grown-up embryos, Mr. President. I guess that's how we should talk about recruits and American citizens, the people of New Orleans. We shouldn't say they're Katrina survivors, and we shouldn't call them our troops. We should call them grown-up embryos. Maybe then he would protect their lives. Maybe then he would actually engage. He believes in the sanctity of some lives.
The Randy Rhoads Show.
I got to tell you, some things drive me nuts. And what drives me mostly nuts is frustration. Now, here's what happened to me. This keeps coming up again and again and again, and it drives me nuts. As you know, I'm sort of kind of in the t-shirt business. So I get an email from someone in Africa, said I'd like to buy 1,500 blank white shirts. Can you give me a price? Now, first thing I'm thinking of is this is some kind of weird scam, or it's one of those, the oil ministers in jail and those Nigerian scams. I get 100 of them a day. I guess you do too. But this is a lady named Elizabeth. She's in Africa. She wants a price on some shirts. Now, on the off chance that it's a legit deal, and I'll tell you, over my 52 long years, I've made a lot of money. Well, that came out wrong, but you know what I mean. Oftentimes, I've made some good money by taking a chance on something that didn't seem at first, you know what I mean? So I figure it's going to take me 2-3 minutes to get this lady a price. So I go to Google, I punch in t-shirts, and up comes designashirt.com. I called them, no damn answer. Here it is. It's 11 o'clock on a Tuesday, and the sons of bitches at designashirt.com don't answer the damn phone. What's wrong with people? Why doesn't anyone in this country want to make any money? It drives me crazy. Nobody wants to make any money in this damn country. Nobody. So I call custominc.com. The same hand job runaround. Busy signal. Then they finally, I keep calling. I finally get some lady. Oh, you need this department. I get over there. It's a damn recording. I don't need a recording. I need a price. What is wrong with people? So I call. Next up, I click on blankshirtstore.com. Same thing. I mean, I don't remember which is which now, but one's busy, one's I'll call you back, one's a voicemail, one's a hand job, another one's a hand job, one just rings. Why the hell you got to add on Google paying real money for that, and a guy that calls you at 11 o'clock on a Tuesday trying to buy 1,500 goddamn shirts, and I can't get anybody to answer the damn phone. So I keep going. I call t-shirthell.com, and they give me a bunch of runaround why they can't help me. Then I called Hanes. I figured, well, Hanes makes shirts, right? So I look up Hanes.com, get their phone number, I call them. And, you know, for this, dial one. For this, dial two. For this, and, then, you know, another hand job runaround. I'm spending time. This is supposed to be a 3-4 minute operation. Here I am, 15, 20, 30 minutes into it. Finally, you know, for old orders, press here. For new orders, press here. I press for new orders. Here comes another damn list, a long-ass menu. Just, I want to buy a goddamn bunch of shirts. Would somebody talk to me? Finally, the crazy bitch picks up the phone. Lady, I need 1,500 white blank shirts. I need them right now. Give me a price. Are they for resale? Lady, what difference does it make? Yes, fine, they're for resale. I'll have to give you another number for resale. Okay, you crazy bitch, it's not for resale. I'm going to wear all 1,500 shirts myself. Just give me a price. She hangs up on me. It just keeps going. Again and again and again. A man can't pick up a phone or an internet connection and get anything done in this country. Nobody wants to make any money in this country. Why is that? It is just amazing to me. My wild guess is the t-shirt business is monstrously competitive. You would think there's a lot of money to be made, and all they got to do is answer the damn phone and give me a damn price. But no, I can't get that done in this country. It happens again and again. I don't know how many times we've talked about this, but nobody wants to make any money. Nobody. You cannot transact business in the United States on a Tuesday at 11 o'clock in the morning. You just can't do it. And why is that? You would think a country the size of America could fill an order. As far as they're concerned, I just wanted one damn shirt. But no. You would think I could make a phone call or a click of a mouse and buy a shirt. But no, you can't do that in this country. Oh, it pisses me off. What is it going to take? This lady named Liz, she's in Africa. She wants 1,500 shirts. And, you know, I thought, hell, she's writing to me over the internet, so she's got an internet connection. Why the hell doesn't she? Well, maybe that's a deal. Hell, I just figured it out. No wonder she's asking me, because she probably did the same thing I did. She called Design a Shirt and Custom-Ink Shirt and BlankShirtStore.com. She's already contacted everybody in America, and nobody will sell her a damn shirt. So she looks at my website and says, hey, this guy knows where he can get a shirt. That's why she's asked me for a price of 1,500 shares, because she can't get anyone to talk to her either. What's wrong with this country? We got a shit for economy. Nobody's making any money. Nobody wants to make any money. You would think somebody in this country would want to sell me 1,500 shirts, but I can't find that person. Isn't that amazing? It happens to me again and again and again, over and over. I call one lady. She says, "Where are you calling from?" Lady, it don't make a fuck. I'm calling from Mars. Are you happy? Give me a damn price on some damn shirt. Oh, I'll have to connect you to somebody who can. No, lady, give me a price. What's wrong with you? A lot of these ladies sounded older. You know, some 40, 50, 60-year-old woman probably worked at the damn shirt store for 40 years. Can't give me a price? No, that'd be helpful. My blood pressure, I know, is like 300 over 250, but it just drives me nuts. Nobody in this country wants to make any money. You can't get anything done. Everybody's away from their desk. Their phone doesn't work. You get a busy signal. Nobody wants to hire someone to answer the phone, to make money, to accept orders, to accept cash from the buyers who are out there desperate to do some business. But no, you can't get any business done in America. Nobody wants to make any money. How can this happen again and again and again and again? Well, there you had it. Show 97 is in the can. Oh, it feels good to be done with one of those. I tell you, you just don't know what it's like to make a big, big show like this. So I'm going to get to work on show 98, which apparently is going to be coming to you from the fabulous Palms Casino in Las Vegas. Me and Tommy are going to corroborate on a show, or is it collaborate? It's one of the two. We're going to put a show together for you, though. Too bad we didn't get to our target goal there of making that our 100th show. I'll tell you the August story someday. And this show in particular, it could have been better, it could have been worse. And I got to thinking, you know how I could make the show better?
The Daily Show with John Stewart.
David Javerbaum, Rachel Axler, Kevin Blyer, Rich Blomquist, Steve Bodo, Tim Carvel, Stephen Colbert, Eric Drysdale, J.R. Havlin, Scott Jacobson, Ben Carlin, Rob Kuttner, Sam Means, Chris Regan, Jason Riesch, Jason Ross, and John Stewart.
That's right. 17 writers. 17 writers make John Stewart very funny. Boy, I'd kill for 17 writers. If I had 17 writers, this would be nonstop hilarity. But we're doing what we can. All praise to Tommy Mack for twisting the occasional knob. Thanks to Tally for her input. I'd like to thank the readers and the subscribers, especially the subscribers. The readers we don't care about so much. No. I'd be at the car lot if it wasn't for the subscribe. I'd be at the car lot if it wasn't for the Thank God people subscribe. So we're going to send you show number 98 from Los Angeles? No. So we're going to send you show number 98 from Las Vegas. Hope to see you there. Most of you won't be, I understand. Maybe you can make the Poker Fest Jersey, maybe in March or April. Then we also have the Tequila Fest Austin. But, you know, we could do a Tequila Fest Dallas. I saw a thing, Del Castillo plays in a, it might be called Lakewood something, but it's an old theater. It's an Art Deco kind of theater. I guess it makes it the 40s or 50s, but it's a beautiful old place, and they've got it all restored and stuff, and it's just really seriously badass. It's a gory, it looks kind of like a cheap version of an opera house, but it's all redone. It's beautiful. It's gorgeous. And Dallas is closer to me anyway than Austin, but it's, I imagine it's closer to everybody unless you're in Austin. But anyway, so as soon as we get back from the Tequila Fest in Vegas, we're going to talk about the Texas Tequila Fest. We'll pick a city depending on where the band's playing. Then we're looking to go to, I don't even know what town it is. Jersey's all one big town, isn't it? But there's some town in Jersey. Rude Rich is going to help me put it together. He works in New York, so it's going to be that close to New York. So we're expecting everybody on the East Coast to show up to the Poker Fest / fundraiser in March or April. And the reason we're calling it that is because it's going to be quite a bit cheaper. We're not having to rent a $3,800 room to make the party happen. So, yes, it's going to be quite a bit less expensive. Whoop-de-doo, big party. Let's go party with Bart. Play some poker and drink some tequila, et cetera, et cetera. So, this is Bart. I'm in a good mood and done with the damn radio show. Well, it's always depressing before the show, but when you get done, it's like a big high. It's like taking a big nose full of heroin or however you do heroin. Thanks for subscribing. I'll get to work on the next show. And let's hope someone brings that monkey to account for his crimes. That's what I want for Christmas, Santa. This is Bart, and I'm out of here.
Intelligence gathered by this and other governments leaves no doubt that the Iraq regime continues to possess some of the most lethal weapons ever devised. For nuclear weapons production. Gathered by this and other governments leaves no doubt that the Iraq regime continues to possess some of the most lethal weapons ever devised.